We are back on the BBP, but we already have a week one game to break down in. Looking ahead to week two for the home opener for the Bengals. I'm Lindsay Patterson, joined with Bengals beat writer for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Tyler Dragon. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing today?
There's a lot to talk about. I mean, we had training camp and the preseason games, but plenty to break down after that Seattle game on the road, falling by one. We're going to get to all of that in just a moment. We're almost dissecting everything right now. Mm-hmm. Andy Dalton, a career day in the air. They couldn't really get that ground game going. Were you surprised with what he was able to do?
I was surprised what he was able to do. You know, you were going up against the Seattle Seahawks. They don't have a really good defense. They're not the Seattle team of old, the Legion of Boom. But, you know, a raucous environment, a loud stadium. They went up there with a silent snap count. And Andy Dalton's first game under Zach Taylor, head coach, and he threw a career high in passing yards. So that is a positive sign. Even in a loss, there were a lot of positive signs, and that was one of them. You have your first game under a new head coach, and you have pretty much a career day passing-wise. The Bengals' offense, they were pretty good. They did not produce in the red zone. They were in the red zone three times and came up with zero touchdowns. That is not what you want to do. But they moved the ball down the field, and they had some big plays, primarily John Ross, those two big touchdown grabs, and CJ, he had a nice long pass there. So there were some positive signs throwing the football, not running, throwing the football. And that was a testament to Zach Taylor's play calling and Andy Dalton finding open receivers, and those receivers capitalizing on opportunities, primarily John Ross with his career day two, 158 yards, I believe, receiving. And that was, I mean, it was up in his neck of the woods, his old college stomping grounds. He went to University of Washington. He had family and friends up in the stands, and he had a pretty good game, and that's good for him.
I think for John Ross, one thing that's different from this year, and I'm going to kind of go ahead and get into plenty of position groups that we're going to go ahead and break down too. But one thing with John Ross, and I said it after talking to him before going into week one, that I felt like this guy just needed that one big play as a confidence booster. And look, John Ross's drops, that definitely hurt him. If you think about the PFF grades, we're going to get to that later in the podcast. I do talk to lead editor Austin Gale. But one thing about John Ross is Andy Dalton and Zach Taylor. And the reason I say that is because I am going to compare right now early on in the podcast to Marvin Lewis, because there was a lot of things I saw differently. Some people would say, oh, the fourth quarter looked really familiar. But before halftime, a lot of Bengals fans will relate to this and know just from watching past teams, they pack it up. I mean, they could have the lead. They could be down on the road at home. They pack it up. If there's seconds to go, I mean, even a little less than a minute, they're in at halftime. They're going to be like, okay, we'll take what we have now. But Zach Taylor was aggressive. And I think that really showed in Andy Dalton going back to John Ross after John Ross drops it, mm-hmm. and he looks like disappointed in himself, and he pretty much knew it was green grass in the end zone. But how does he make up for it? He throws right back to him, and with Zach Taylor calling plays down there, I think that is the confidence that John Ross needs, and we saw it out there on Sunday.
Yeah, I knew the team from the beginning had confidence in John Ross, because John Ross was out all of training camp. He did not practice. And that first day back in the field, he was in the starting lineup with the starters in that 11 personnel group and running with the first team. And Zach Taylor said from the beginning, you know, John Ross, he is going to be a key player on this offensive team. And they pretty much showed it. And that's credit to John Ross, too, because it's easy to get down on yourself. And he admitted that he did in the past when he had some drop passes or some unsuccessful plays. The old John Ross and the young John Ross in the NFL, he would put his head down, start pouting like, man, like, am I going to make it in this league? Am I going to be a good player? Now, you know, mentally, he's a lot stronger. And even though he has some, you know, bad plays, two drops in that first half, he bounced back strong. And as an athlete, your mental makeup and mentally, that's half the battle right there. Just being strong mentally and knowing that, you know, if you did bad one play, you did bad on this play, you can bounce back and you have another play after that. And to be able to have two long touchdown passes after those drops, you know, that's a lot of credit to John Ross, because like I said, it's easy to put your head down, especially the type of career John Ross has had, a rocky up and down tenure as a Bengal, and injuries have plagued his career. And now that his first game this season with a new head coach, I mean, you can see that the sky's the limit for him, especially as a deep threat.
I think definitely that confidence is a crazy drug, and we'll see that out of an offensive mind coach and Zach Taylor and John Ross. That duo can do some pretty good things, definitely with A.J. Green on the sideline, and then you got Tyler Boyd out there going to get double coverage all day. But I want to go to the offensive line right now, and I had mentioned PFF. We will have a weekly interview every Monday and Tuesday. You'll be able to hear that with me and lead editor Austin Gale, and players care about those grades. Mm-hmm. And I want to give credit to Trey Hopkins right now. I know it's one game, and we did see Trey Hopkins at center last year six times with Andy Dalton when Billy Price was hurt. Man, he put on a show in that debut. Only one hurry and 59 pass blocking snaps, and he had the highest grade on run blocking that day.
Yeah, well, I liked his pass blocking. I liked the overall offensive line's pass blocking efforts. Andy Dalton, numbers-wise, he was sacked five times. You don't want to see your quarterback go down that many times, but he dropped back. Yeah. They threw a lot of pass attempts, and for him to only be sacked five times with, you know, you have a good pass rushing unit with Jadeveon Clowney and those boys, but for him just to go down that few times with that amount of pass attempts, that was a good job for the Bengals. Now, run blocking, that's a different story.
They struggled. They struggled a little bit. I mean, I think everybody saw that in the first and second half with this team. But
ugh. Yeah. So I think overall, the offensive line, they did solid. I would give them probably a B- overall. I haven't looked at the Pro Football Focus grades yet. I imagine they're course with B- overall, but the run blocking was bad, and you know they only had 34 yards rushing and they averaged what, 2 yards a carry, so you want to get that running fixed quickly, because they have not been a good running team going into the preseason. I know those games don't count, and then entering week one they've been struggling running the football.
I think one big thing, though, when we do talk about their offensive line, look, they need Cordy Glenn back ASAP, yeah. And he's still going through the end of the concussion protocol. But some good news towards the end of practice last week, he was out there on the side working out. So we will find out on Wednesday. Again, we're recording this on Tuesday to see if he is back out there on a limited basis, and that would be huge on Wednesday or Thursday before the home opener at Paul Brown Stadium. But one penalty on the offensive line. I think that's a crazy stat, especially on the road at CenturyLink Field. We made all this hype about how loud it was going to be, and I think maybe those silent snap counts helped with Andy Dalton.
Yeah, I alluded to it earlier. That silent snap count, that was very good coaching by Jim Turner, the Bengals offensive line coach and the Bengals coaching staff, to have those guys in sync and well-prepared and probably the loudest or second loudest stadium in the NFL. For them to only have one penalty, for the communication to be on point and precise, that was a great job by the offensive line. Like I said, I give them a B-. And the offensive line has been much maligned this all offseason going into last year. And for them to play the way they did is a pretty good positive step in the right direction, even in a loss. I keep on saying that, even in a loss. The Bengals did lose, but there was positive film. There was positive plays put on film on that game. And so if you're a Bengals fan, you have to feel pretty good and optimistic about this team right now.
You definitely feel optimistic if you looked at the defensive line. And again, going in, we talked about it. The hype was there, and they showed it on the road. Not surprised at all. They do have a lot of depth there, but Sam Hubbard, hometown guy, he had himself a day.
Yeah, 10 tackles, 2 sacks. It was his best game of his young career. He had the best game among that defensive line group. And I wasn't surprised the defensive line had a stellar game. You know, Carlos Dunlap told me that it was the best position group on this Bengals team, and they play like it. Definitely. They pioneered that defense. They kept the entire team in the game. Seahawks had the number one rushing offensive attack a season ago, and they contained them, Chris Carson and Russell Wilson, to 72 rushing yards. They barely averaged, I think, barely over 2 yards a carry. Russell Wilson had less than 200 yards passing. So most of that is attributed to the defensive line play and them pressuring Russell Wilson early and often. They had 16 pressures, and that is pretty good for the team because, I mean, Russell Wilson, he's a scrambling quarterback. He likes to get outside the pocket, and he did not have that much success overall in that game.
They knew definitely. Carlos Dunlap told me last week in locker room they had to get to him. Everybody knows his speed is something else on the field. So not surprised with how the D-line played in week one. It'll be interesting as it goes on. But I'm going to stay with the defense right now because the secondary, not so much on the good day when you look at that. I actually want to go to the Drake Kirkpatrick penalty. There's one thing in the NFL, and I don't believe this myth, but a lot of Bengals fans will say, well, it's because they're the Bengals. That's why they got it. No, that's just the NFL. If you push back and the ref turns around and he catches that second push, I mean, you just can't do it. I mean, that penalty cost him. You hate to see that.
Now, I have to admit, I thought that was a ticky-tack penalty. Both players were kind of jostling a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
It seems like it's always the case, though, the refs catch the second guy. They don't catch that initial interaction right there. I believe the refs should have just said, you know what, guys, go back to your respective huddles and play another down.
But you know how it is, though. They see one push, and it's like they got to call it. And you can't be that second guy. You got to walk away. And Dre's a vet, so he should know better in that situation.
It's definitely easier said than done.
I'm not out there hitting
each other and talking smack, and somebody, you know, nudges you a little bit. I mean, sometimes hot heads prevail.
Yeah, and it definitely did for that team. But I actually want to go to Joe Mixon right now because we had mentioned they couldn't get the game going, the run game going, and that was really no surprise out there as the day got on. I mean, you got a guy like Bobby Wagner out there who's all over the field. But Joe Mixon actually left a little bit early. Gio was shining when he was out there on the field too, but they really couldn't get it going. That's why Andy Dalton had a career day in the air, over 418 yards. He's day-to-day right now. Do we have any new updates on Joe Mixon?
So the team is holding out hope that he can play week two. We'll find out more information later on this week. As you mentioned, we're recording this podcast on a Tuesday. The team practices on Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday. We'll get a better gauge where Joe Mixon is at. It's dicey as a running back. You never want to have an ankle sprain. Obviously, you use your ankles a lot to cut, to kind of twist, to find those open holes in the backfield. The team is optimistic. They didn't seem too concerned when it initially happened on Sunday. Joe Mixon was on the sideline. He had his helmet off, and he was cheering on his teammates throughout the fourth quarter. When I talked to Zach Taylor, he said, you know, it doesn't seem too bad, but we'll wait and see. And then after an MRI came out, you said it revealed that it was that ankle sprain that we anticipated. So it's going to be interesting to see how the swelling goes down this week, and you got to ice it and got to stay off it. He did not have a walking boot. So we're going to see later on in practices this week if he's able to play. If I was a betting man, I would put it 50-50 right now. 50-50. I'm not going to bet right now. It's 50-50. I need to see two practices first.
Yeah, and with Joe Mixon and even Travion Williams, like, I think that's going to be interesting going into this week because the Bengals did make a roster move on Tuesday afternoon, releasing Jordan Willis, which this makes sense because he was inactive week one, and they have 11 guys on the DL, on the defensive line right now. So that makes sense to me. But to sign a linebacker, were you surprised? I mean, I know they still need the linebacker help.
I was not surprised. They signed Leroy Reynolds. He's a veteran linebacker. He's been well-traveled throughout this league. It was kind of interesting that they didn't just put Hardy Nickerson back on the 53-man roster. They went out and got, you know, a veteran linebacker that doesn't really know the system, and he's going to be thrown in there. Obviously, he's going to be at the bottom of the depth chart, but I was like, well, you have Hardy Nickerson already in the building. Why don't you just elevate him and promote him to the 53-man roster? But I'm not the coach. I'm not the GM. I don't make those decisions. I would have put Hardy Nickerson up there. We'll see what Leroy Reynolds does. He's a veteran linebacker. He's played in a little over 80 games, has a little over 80 sacks, but he doesn't move the needle a little bit.
Well, I think that just speaks what they think about Hardy right now. If they're not moving him up, they're keeping him out there. They don't feel like, you know, anybody else is going to take him. So keep him on the practice squad. I think one thing after the week one game, and I actually saw it from a lot of national writers, and that's one thing you get from Bengals fans. They're like, what is the national media saying about us? And I think I saw one of my favorite tweets. It says, if you didn't have context behind this game, and I'm paraphrasing it right now, you would think that the Seahawks were the underdogs and they were just beating a superior Bengals team by 1 point on the road. I mean, we made our predictions last week, Tyler. Mm-hmm. Going into this game, CenturyLink Field, you have a young offensive line, Zach Taylor's first time coaching. He wasn't scared.
No.
I mean, he went out there and just throwing out the punches and being aggressive. And I think for Bengals fans, when they're watching that at home, thinking the Bengals were the better team.
I want to say they were the better team. They controlled.
They should have won.
They controlled the pace of the game.
Yeah.
And if you look at stats, you can say, okay, yes, the Bengals should have won. Anytime you dominate total yards like that, anytime your quarterback passes for a career high over 400 passing yards and the opposing quarterback doesn't eclipse 200 passing yards, you should win that game. However, then if you dig a little bit deeper and you see that the Bengals were 0-3 in the red zone, lost a turnover battle, and didn't capitalize on a lot of opportunities, and you're like, okay, well, and then it's away. So if I can't say they were the better team, they just controlled the pace of the game. And since they did not capitalize on those opportunities and they're an inexperienced team winning wise, and you have a Super Bowl champion quarterback on the other side, a Super Bowl winning head coach, and one of the best linebackers, if not the best linebacker in football, you have to beat those teams. You can't just hang around and hope something happens your way or hope about a ball bounces your way. You have to go out and beat a team like the Seattle Seahawks. And the Bengals left the door open, and Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, Bobby Wagner, they know how to win, and that's what they did on Sunday.
I think what's really telling, though, is when at the end of the game, I mean, you're always going to have the official controversy, and if it's a fumble, if it's a completion, I mean, I think it was completion. I think the whole entire world watching the game would rewatch that, and even the officials, and say, that's a completion, not a fumble. It wasn't going to change the game.
Yeah, it was definitely I thought it was an incomplete pass.
Incomplete pass.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I saw Andy Dalton's arm going forward. The officials called it a different way. In my opinion, does not have any impact on the game. The Bengals weren't going to go get a 50-yard gain and go all the way down the field and kick a field goal. And then even if they did kick a field goal, you know, they had already missed one earlier in the game, and the conditions were not all that great. So to blame it on the officials and to look at that play, nah, the Bengals lost the game. They had other opportunities to win, and they did not capitalize.
And I don't think the blame was there on the official. I'm not. The blame was the reason they didn't get the call is the reason. I think you watched the game, and you, like you mentioned, there were opportunities to capitalize, and they couldn't do that. I just think I disagree with the call.
I think
it was definitely a fumble. One thing I want to bring up, because we did talk about how aggressive Zach Taylor was going into halftime. Mm-hmm. In the fourth quarter, with a few minutes to go, he punts the ball. Do you agree with that call?
Yeah, because I always say defense wins championships. Mm-hmm. And if you can't stop somebody, you don't deserve to win. And you got to rely on your defense at the end of the day, because I know it's an offense-driven league, and we all like a lot of points. The offenses go down the field. But defense wins championships, and that's showing signs, and that's showing confidence that you have in your defense. And the defense played well. It's not like the defense was getting run up and down the field the whole entire game. They were playing very good, especially that defensive line. So he put the confidence in his defense. It just didn't work out.
All the three and outs, I don't blame him either. You think you can get one more stop in him. When you look at the team after week one, I think a lot of people like the overreaction. Win or lose, you look around the NFL. We're going to get to all that in the AFC North in a little bit. What did we learn about the Cincinnati Bengals after four quarters?
This team is a little bit better than a lot of people thought. I knew that they were going to be competitive. I don't know if that's going to translate in a lot of wins this season, but I do expect a lot of these ball games to be close. The Bengals have some talent, and they lost by one without arguably their best overall player, A.J. Green. Now, when A.J. Green comes back, just look at that off. That offense is going to be spread wide open. You have John Ross. We already see what type of player, what type of things he can do in the football field. You have Tyler Eifert. You have Joe Mixon, AFC leading rusher. You got Tyler Boyd. I mean, there's a lot of great weapons on this offense.
Oh, you didn't even mention Tyler. We didn't even look at the tight end group yet. Yeah. I mean, it's loaded.
Yeah. I mean, you have so many different options for Andy Dalton at his disposal to choose from. So the offensive line has to perform well, and they did pretty good. They're off to a satisfactory start. So it's going to be interesting. And we already saw what the defense looked much improved. They didn't look like the worst defense in all of football on Sunday. So if they perform like that and the offense continues to progress and get better and then get A.J. Green back, like Carl Lawson told me, the sky's the limit.
I think when you look at the wide receiver room right now with A.J. Green, I know everybody wants an update at the moment. Still looks on schedule, maybe that week three, week four, until that changes and Zach Taylor updates everyone. That's what they're leaning towards right now. He is still in the boot. We saw him in the locker room the last couple weeks. But I wonder when what we saw with John Ross on Sunday being able to get out there and show some confidence. Look, I know he had drops, but he also found the end zone twice too. With A.J. Green's sideline right now and John Ross, and of course he's going to get those opportunities when A.J. Green's back too, but kind of getting that start out there. I mean, Tyler Boyd has told us before, and it's not like John Ross is a rookie out there, but he's shown people and he's told people and he's given advice and he's talked in that wide receiver room because he is a leader that's out there and he shows what you can do. He's somebody who can talk to John Ross and be like, you can have that season that I have. You can have that 2018 this year. This is your opportunity. And John Ross has said Tyler's really taken him under his wing, too. He's talked to him about it.
Yeah, you know, we talked about how tough Seattle is and a place to play for any NFL team. However, for John Ross individually, I think that was a great place for him to start the season. I mean, he went to college at UW Washington in Seattle. He had a lot of family and friends in the crowd. So he felt comfortable being back there in the West Coast. He's from California. But, you know, he was close to home and in his old college stomping grounds. So he had a sense of comfort. It wasn't like a place he'd never been there before. And so even after the game, he had a Washington shirt on. I saw him. I was like, hey, you got your Washington shirt? I was like, yeah, man. Like he was happy to be there. Even though they lost, he was happy. And then going into the game, that's extra motivation. You know, you have your family there and you're at your old college stomping grounds. So you're like, yo, you know, I used to shine in this city. I used to be one of the stars in this city. So I'm going to go out there and show what I can do, what I did in college. And that's pretty much what he did. Career high in receiving yards, two touchdowns. That was his best game of his career.
And he had this quote that actually I think just stands out. And a lot of fans thought this would happen when Zach Taylor came in, as we mentioned, an offensive mind getting to call plays out there and John Ross getting healthy and on the field. And that's the most important thing is staying healthy. But he said this after the game, and I think this quote, it just captures it all up after week one. He says, I can honestly say it now. I lost my confidence in myself the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Now I'm coming in with a different mentality, and I just got to go out there and continue to believe in myself. And he actually told me 2 weeks ago, he said, I've changed my mindset. It is all positive out there. I'm willing to do whatever they need me to do on this offense, and I think Zach Taylor is really going to use that out there for him, and it's going to be a game changer.
Yeah, like I said before, so much about sports is mental. And if you're not strong mentally, it's going to show on the football field. It's going to show on the basketball court, no matter what sport you play. If you don't have that confidence, if you don't have a strong mentality going out there, you're not going to last long in the NFL or no matter what sport you play, no matter what level you're on. You have to have that confidence.
And with Tyler Eifert, I know he only had 27 yards, but for Bengals fans, Andy was out there blocking, but I think for Bengals fans, seeing him go back out there on the field, and we had mentioned when he took that snap against Washington, that one snap, and slowly coming back out for another two snaps in game three, how that just gets you game ready. I talked to Solomon Wilcox about it a couple weeks ago, and he pretty much told me, like, that does get you ready for game day. You know, you go through the routine, you go through the locker room stages, go through the game stages, and it gets you ready to go back out there. Yeah, you're going to think about the injuries. I mean, Tyler Eifert's had them. He's one of those guys. He does get criticized for his injuries, but he lets it. He's told us before on Beyond the Stripes, I want to be out there so badly. I wish people knew how hard I worked on the side. I mean, rehabbing. Yeah. I want to be out there. I mean, he wants to get that contract, and I think him taking a couple hits out there was good for him getting right back up.
Yeah, it was good. And he's going to play like he's never been injured before, because if you go out there hoping, oh, I hope I don't get hurt in this play. Oh, I don't. Hope I don't get hurt on this play. Then you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, you don't want to think about it.
You can't go out there timid. You got to go out there playing like, you know, this is a game. Have your mind clear and focus on that play alone and then the play after that when it happens. You can't go out there thinking, okay, you know, I tore my ACL, or for in Typher's case, I messed up my back or whatever last year. I need to go out here and hopefully my back isn't hurt to get hurt if I get hit. So, yeah, it was a positive start for him. I know he didn't, you know, register a lot of catches, but, you know, as long as he's on the field, he is a target, and Andy Dalton has that connection with him. So that's going to be good going forward. And the team likes him in the red zone.
Yep.
They need to look his way because they were 0-3
I was just about to hit on that. Hopefully at home they can get in the red zone and they'll be looking at 85. So that's something to keep an eye on. I asked you what you learned about this team in week one. What's one word that you would describe them after watching that?
That's a good question. I'm going to go with the O word, optimistic. There are a lot of positive takeaways from Seattle, starting with that defensive line. Then, like I said, the offensive line, I give them a B-. John Ross looked like a legit deep threat that you can rely on. The Seahawks could not contain him. Andy Dalton, career-high passing yards on his very first game with Zach Taylor at head coach. Secondary played okay. They gave up a few chunk plays, but overall, I mean, they had one of the best days of any defensive group in the NFL. I think they gave up the fourth fewest total yards in all of week one. So that is a positive step for the defense, a defensive unit that ranked 32nd in the NFL last year, and they're only 32 teams. You can't go much lower than that. So there are positive takeaways. However, they're not moral victories in the NFL. You need to start getting in the winner's column, and we'll see if they can register a victory against San Francisco. San Francisco is there aren't world beaters out there in the Bay. So the Bengals should have a good shot at beating the 49ers, especially at home and Zach Taylor's home opener.
I'm going to go a quick note on that defense. I mean, there were times in 2018 that you didn't even know if they're on the field because there were missed tackles on Sunday, and they saw them there, but it was pretty brutal last season in 2018. I think we'll see some changes there. And what's crazy is you kind of have the same exact unit you had in 2018. So what they're able to do, and credit to the defensive coordinator with the same defensive unit, is pretty crazy in week one. One word that I would use right now would be encouraging. Mm-hmm. And again, we're going week by week. Week one, you got to show up at home. You have that home opener at Paul Brown Stadium, and Zach Taylor had mentioned, hey, we have some things we want to fix. Of course you do. Nobody played perfect in that game. But I think depending on where you put this team going into the season, and we have all talked about it and given our predictions, and at the end of the day, it doesn't mean anything. We'll see what happens. We can say whatever when we look at paper, or we compare it to last season and some of the changes, younger guys, the O-line, all the weaknesses and some of the strengths. I would say encouraging, because I don't know if I'll change my games that they're going to win this year. I still think it's around 6-7. Mm-hmm. But I think what we talked about in the game before week, or in the podcast before week one, make it interesting. Go out there and be competitive. You fall by one, to a team that's difficult on the road, at home. You know you were going to face some challenges with some of your weak spots. To look that way, I think Bengals fans walk away from that feeling encouraged before you get to this home opener. And maybe there are a couple more W's than you thought were going to be, Ellison. And I'm going to go ahead and say it right now, Tyler. That Miami Dolphins game, I'm going to put a big dub right there. I know a lot can change as the season goes on, and I kind of want to connect with that right now around the AFC North. Whew, what a day for that division. I think the Browns fans, they or the Browns in general, I think you get taken down just a notch. Again, it's overreaction after week one. I think you learn some things. One thing about that game, and again, we're going to get to all the Bengals and San Francisco after we go to locker room on Wednesday. We'll have more interviews. We'll have another short, quick pod and preview over on Cincinnati.com and the BBP coming out Thursday, and you'll be able to catch that. But I want to go around the AFC North right now because it's crazy. After week one, there was only one winner, and we'll start with that winner. And I was tweeting with you on game day. I said, okay, Lamar Jackson, I see you right now. And I think at the moment, if you were looking at the AFC North, the Ravens' overall talent and coming away with a dub, and Miami Dolphins players, reports are coming out that they won't trade it. Most of them, not all of them.
Yeah, losing 42-0 at halftime, that is completely unacceptable for NFL team. I mean, they weren't playing the Miami Hurricanes.
That's bad.
They weren't playing UC Florida. They were playing professional athletes. They were losing 42-0 against the Ravens. That is terrible. That is, I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw the score of that game. You cannot, that's more telling on the Miami Dolphins than it is on the Ravens.
That's why it's a hard comparison.
Yeah, it is. But as far as Lamar Jackson, I have to give him credit. And, you know, I was kind of singing his praises earlier. I said, you know, if he develops as a passer and he gets more consistency throwing the football, watch out, because the sky's the limit for him, because he already has the running ability. He's the best running quarterback since Michael Vick. And he displayed on Sunday, albeit the Dolphins, that he has improved passing. And I don't care what opponent is back there. He has some throws that he could not make last year on Sunday. And he made those throws in week one, 5 touchdown passes. He played very well. And the improvements that I wanted to see him make in year two, I saw them on Sunday. So it's going to be key for him to keep on going, especially against better opponents, more skilled opponents. The Dolphins aren't that. If Lamar Jackson can continue on and showing promise in the pocket, showing that touch and his deep ball, delivering accurate, precise passes, then I'm telling you, the Ravens are the team to beat in this division.
And I want to go over to the Browns right now. It sounds crazy. I felt like it was closer than the score. And the only reason I say that right now is because the Browns were just shooting themselves in the foot. The way they were playing, all the penalties, it just wasn't, it was silly stuff, like kicking them in the face and getting kicked out. And look, their O-line still has some holes, and Baker's definitely going to feel that as he was running all over the field in Cleveland. But to fall to 30 in the opener, and it was almost like you almost bought into what everybody was saying about you, forgetting that, hey, I got to show up on Sunday.
Yeah, the Browns are finding out it's a little bit different when you have that target on your back. You know, they were the offseason darlings, and every team in the NFL is going for them now because they won the offseason. They got all these signings, headlined by Odell Beckham, talking about Super Bowl, and we want to go here and we want to go there, talking all that. And at the end of the day, you got all that talk, you got to walk. And so, I mean, I don't care about any of the headlines that they got, any of the players they got. You got to perform out on the field. And I knew going into the season that when you have those type of expectations and you haven't won before, and now you're not going to sneak up on teams anymore, then you're going to have some trouble, especially out there at the start. So it's going to be interesting to see how they handle all this pressure and all the expectations now, because people actually think Cleveland is going to make some noise this year. They didn't make any noise in week one, but people actually think that they are going to do a little bit of something. Ooh. I don't think so, but people do.
I'll see as the season goes on. Look, I think their games are going to be a tad bit closer than what we saw on that opener. When it rains, it pours, I felt like, in the second half for them. And one thing that I actually liked, it was a message after the game, and it said, it was a joke meme, and it said, if you didn't love us when we were losing by 30, don't love us now when we're losing by 30. So that's what's happening in Cleveland. And we'll see as the season goes on in the AFC North. I'll wrap it up right now. The Steelers, they've definitely been the talk right now, and their receiver has been long gone in the offseason. He was Oakland, now he's with the Patriots. And again, we've talked about Antonio Brown enough, and we'll get to that as the season goes on and the Bengals play the Patriots. But when you look at the Steelers right now, man, they got some holes.
Man, the Steelers play on Sunday night? I mean, they were acting like they thought the game was on Monday night. Like, it's 33-3? I mean, I know the Patriots, they're the NFL's version of a super team, but come on now. 33-3, you have experience against New England. I know it's bad experiences because most of the time you're on the wrong side of the scoreboard against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. But you got to be more competitive than that. You have to be more competitive than that. They did not show up, and they were completely dominated by the Patriots. And as far as the Patriots, I mean, that was a statement that they made on week one. They just looked like the best team in the NFL, and it's not even a close second right now.
And that's without Antonio Brown, who's going to be joining the team in week two. And to make matters worse in Miami, they play the Miami Dolphins in week two. It's not even like they need him out there. And I think Tom Brady's going to play until he's 50. It's not even a hot take.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the Patriots win week two.
That one's going to be ugly. I don't even want to see that right now. But poor Miami Dolphins. I did get some social questions. Again, we asked for these each week over on the Instagram page, ENQ Bengals, or over on Twitter, ENQ Sports. We'll start with Jesse Adkins. And again, we've talked about the defense. Even Carl Lawson getting back out there, which is good for a regular season form. We saw a tad bit of him in preseason. He said, where did this defense come from?
I mean, the defense underachieved last year. They have some talent, especially on that defensive line and in the secondary with Jesse Bates and Sean Williams. It's that linebacking unit that, you know, there's some holes there. But overall, you felt like the defense, they just underachieved and they did not play up to their potential. And in Seattle, it felt like they were kind of clicking and kind of living up to those expectations and that potential that they have. Because they have some players on that side of the ball. Anytime you got Geno Atkins, Carlos Dunlap, and, you know, Carl Lawson, who led all the NFL rookies in sacks in his first season, you got a great defensive line. You got a solid foundation to build upon. And then on the back end, I mean, Jesse Bates, he can be a Pro Bowl safety. Sean Williams, he can be another Pro Bowl safety. Dre's back there. So it's going to be interesting to see if this defense can continue improving. They had a solid start in week one.
I think that's definitely credit to the coaching right now because, as I mentioned, you have the same pieces that you had in 2018 and you're only getting more depth out there. And it was a game changer in week one. And one thing I want to bounce off this a little bit, I know we talked about it in after locker room last week, and the offensive players, defensive players, they kept telling us, like, and I asked you, I said, is this just player speak out there? But they said, we're going to try some different things. Do you think it was, you know, us seeing very little offensively out there in preseason that they were like, we got some tricks. We got some tricks up our sleeves.
Well, that flea flicker was a trick.
Yeah.
And it worked. So there are a couple, you know, innovative offensive tricks that Zach Taylor has up his sleeve. We saw some. We saw a lot of bunch formation. I wouldn't say a lot, but some bunch formations. You saw some interesting plays. I think the Bengals will have some more of that going forward. They didn't want to obviously unleash the whole bag of tricks in week one. And then also the weather played a factor in how they called the game because it was raining really hard for a stretch there in Seattle.
D311D says, is this the real John Ross or is this a flash? I know a lot of tweets that I received when I did say Zach Taylor mentioned John Ross will play Sunday versus Washington. And a lot of the responses were like, why? Who cares? He's a bust. I don't know what he's going to do. Again, we mentioned there were a few drops and there's some things that John Ross wants to clean up. We've talked about his confidence. I think this is just the start. And that is, that can be overreaction Monday. That can be having Zach Taylor out there as an offensive mind. But I think we're finally going to see that confidence out of John Ross. And I say that because he's been allowed to mess up and still get the ball again. Some coaches, I mean, we saw with John Ross, his first snap out there, when he dropped the ball, it was like, see you later, you're going to the bench, a couple years ago. And him staying healthy is a positive mindset. But I think it's just believing in him. And that might sound silly and or whatever, but I think just having that faith in him and knowing, like, my quarterback's still throwing to me. Because it's not even just Zach Taylor. You know, Andy's getting the ball right back to him after drops.
Yeah, John Ross' first half embodied pretty much his whole career in Cincinnati. He had those drops, mm-hmm. and then he had those two great plays. So it's up and down, up and down, up and down. The key thing for John Ross is consistency. He has to be consistent catching the football, and he has to consistently be on the field. And that means not in the injury table, the locker room, and the medical tent. Like, he has to be healthy. So if he can do those two things, it's way easier said than done. But if he can just hone in on focusing on catching the football and being consistent at catching the football, being a precise route runner and taking care of his body and not getting these knick-knack injuries like tight hamstrings, he can be a productive player in this league. And we see it in flashes. You saw it in flashes last year, those 7 touchdown grabs. If he can stay on the field, we know what type of player he is. He's one of the fastest players in the NFL. You don't run a 4-2 by accident. He's one of the fastest players, and that translates on the field because the Seahawks secondary, they could not keep up with him. He ran by everybody on the field.
Yeah, he said that speed is different than it was in 2018. So we're going to see that out of John Ross as the season goes on. Again, AJ Green still sidelined. They're hoping he's back week 3 or week 4. We're hoping to get another update this week. Still in a boot. Again, you're going to want to follow us over on Twitter at Lindsay Patterson, LNDS Patterson. And Tyler, what's your Twitter name?
At the Tyler Dragon.
And as I mentioned, everybody loves those PFF numbers. You're going to want to visit PFF and follow them on Twitter and check them out all season long because they have the grades. The Bengals D-line, no surprise, grading well. And Trey Hopkins, one of their top guys out there. And I get into that with lead editor Austin Gale next on the BBP Extra. It is time for the BBP Extra every week. You're going to want to go check out PFF all season long for the NFL. Cincinnati.com will have you covered. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened in Seattle and look ahead to the Niners. I'm joined by lead editor Austin Gale. Austin, we got to go to Andy Dalton. He had himself a career day, over 400 yards and high set for completions, too.
Oh, absolutely. I think from a box score perspective, he did the best within Zach Taylor's scheme. Taylor didn't ask him to do a ton from 5 and 7-step dropbacks. Quick time to throw, get the ball out to, you know, John Ross and Tyler Boyd, get the ball out to your playmakers. Don't take, you know, a ton of hits. And he performed really well under pressure. I think that's a huge thing for him. This Bengals offensive line is not going to be good. He needs to play well under pressure if the Bengals are going to have any success. Completed 10 of 16 passes for 163 yards and a touchdown under pressure. If he keeps that trend up, they're going to be not just close in these games, but they're going to win a couple games that maybe people don't expect them to.
We're going to hit on the offensive line right now because that has been the topic for about 2 to 3 years with the Cincinnati Bengals. You are without left tackle Cordy Glenn right now. He's in concussion protocol, but he has been making his way back to the rehab field. How do you feel they fared on the road?
I mean, Trey Hopkins made PFF's team of the week this week, you know, allowed just one pressure, great run blocking grade, solid pass protection grade. And then you look at John Miller, 0 pressures allowed. The interior was great against a bad Seattle Seahawks defensive interior front from a pass rushing perspective, but that's great to see from Hopkins and Miller. The edges, not so much. They need Cordy Glenn back. Andre Smith allowed a ton of pressures, Bobby Hart as well, and Michael Jordan, the rookie out of Ohio State, he welcomed to the NFL, allowed more than 4 pressures for him as well. But Andy Dalton, again, like I said, handled the pressure well. If he can do that, 163 yards under pressure, this Bengals team will be all right. A bigger problem with this offensive line, and we spoke this too, is the run game. They need to be better run blockers up front to open up holes for a healthy Joe Mixon, hopefully, and a newly signed Giovanni Bernard.
Everybody wants to talk John Ross. He's been the offseason topic. He got back out there on the field 2 weeks of practice playing for the Bengals. Zach Taylor told me last week he was going to take the field. I got a lot of so what's, but he did find the end zone twice. But those drops.
Yeah, the drops are going to kill his grade in PFF's grading system, but it's a breath of fresh air for John Ross. This is a guy that's constantly struggled with drops, struggled to get open, really even draw targets in this Bengals offense. The fact that he was able to have the box score production he did have is such a breath of fresh air. It's a bounce back game for John Ross. Hopefully confidence he can build on. I think Taylor knows what he's good at and knows what he's not so good at. Run straight, catch the ball underneath, and make plays with your feet. And I think John Ross in this system is already, I can already tell, a little bit more favored. And with AJ Green gone, they're going to lean on him a bit more. I think you can expect to see a heavy dose of John Ross moving forward, maybe even some exclusive packages for him.
Tyler Eifert, only 27 yards on the day, but he was out there blocking for the tight ends.
Oh, yeah. Tyler Eifert, 7 pass blocking snaps, earned a high grade there, and caught all 5 of his targets. No drops from him. It was a low average depth of target. He's still, making his way back to be a yards after catch monster, but I think given where the ball was thrown for him, he made the best of what he had.
We talked a little bit about this last week. Seattle, that average to below average offensive line, the Bengals' strength, their defensive line. Were you surprised what they were able to do on the road?
Not surprised at all. I think Carl Lawson played well. You had Sam Hubbard made our team of the week, as did Geno Atkins. The pressures were there. I think they're always going to be a good pass rushing unit, especially pitted against a Seattle Seahawks offensive line that isn't great. I think they took advantage of a good matchup and forced Russell Wilson to make plays with his feet and nearly came out with the win for that reason. I think the Bengals' pass rush helped out a ton. They did need some help on the back end, though. The coverage unit kind of missed some assignments, blown coverages for sure.
We're going to look ahead. Again, the Bengals get that home opener at Paul Brown Stadium versus the 49ers. They're going to see Jimmy G just 2 games back. We will see him out there on the field on Sunday. How's that matchup looking?
I would be really worried about Jimmy Garoppolo if I was a San Francisco 49ers fan right now. He did not look good from a clean pocket, never pushed the ball downfield, very low average depth of target for him. Over 70% of Jimmy Garoppolo's yards in week 1 came after the catch. He's leaning on George Kittle, Dante Pettis, these guys for too much. He needs to push the ball downfield if they're going to move the ball offensively. I think this is a big concern for San Francisco. Yes, Kyle Shanahan's scheme has a lot of underneath throws, a lot of dump off to the flats and play action, but if Garoppolo is not going to be a deep passer, 10-plus, 20-plus yards down the field, this 49ers team is going to struggle to pick up points. They can't just have Richard Sherman pick 6s every week.
You mentioned Richard Sherman again out there for some of the Bengals' offensive playmakers. What's that going to look like out there on Sunday?
This pass rush for the San Francisco 49ers is drastically improved. D Ford added this offseason from Kansas City. Nick Bosa selected, obviously, 2nd overall in the draft. Pass rush improved means the secondary looks a lot better. Jameis Winston was under pressure all day long. Yes, that Bucs offensive line isn't great, but to see D Ford and Nick Bosa have the success they did, you're going to see Richard Sherman have more success. Akello Witherspoon, all these guys in San Francisco. That is a big worrisome mark for the Cincinnati Bengals offensive line. I would argue the 49ers pass rush is better than what Seattle's putting out right now with a inexperienced Javon Clowney in that system. Nick Bosa is going to give Andre Smith and Bobby Hart some fits, and as will D Ford.
Andy Dalton had to have a career day because they couldn't get that run game going. Joe Mixon day-to-day right now with a sprain. What does the run game look like? Are they going to be able to get the ground game going?
I don't know. I think it would be very tough to see a bounce back for this offensive line from a run-blocking perspective against the San Francisco 49ers defense. This team is inexperienced, and the guys that are experienced aren't great run blockers. Joe Mixon and Giovanni Bernard and whoever else they run back there are going to be fighting for yards after contact every play. I think every game this season, it's not going to be easy. It's going to be tough sledding for this Bengals run game all year long.
What's up at PFF?
Right now at PFF, going through team of the week, analyzing week 1, but really we're just not trying to overreact to small sample sizes. Lamar Jackson may be the NFL MVP after week 1. We have to look forward, try and see where things are developing. I think what I'm really impressed with and writing a story right now, Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper in Dallas looks like a totally different player, vastly improved. Really excited to see him move forward with Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott. Great win for the Dallas Cowboys in week 1. Again, just looking at all these teams and where they've improved, where they haven't, it's going to be exciting stuff at PFF for sure.
Awesome. What happened to the Cleveland Browns?
Oh, man. Baker Mayfield was not his day. He woke up feeling dangerous, and so did that defense. It was not good. I wish Baker Mayfield, obviously PFF loved Baker Mayfield coming out of Oklahoma. He did not look good yesterday. I think frustrated penalties, 17 penalties, most for the Browns since 1951. Pass rush didn't look great. Offensive line struggled. This Browns team got, I think a wake-up call. All hype team of the offseason, 5.5-point favorites heading into this game, and they got punched in the mouth. And I think moving forward, they're going to learn from this. Freddie Kitchen has to learn from this if they are going to live up to high, high expectations. Baker Mayfield, though, needs to bounce back. You have performances like that, you're not going to win a lot of games.
I want to go around the NFL or the AFC North right now. If you're Pittsburgh Steelers fans, are you overreacting and you need some more help right now?
I think that it's safe to react a little bit. I mean, it was one thing to lose to the Patriots in Foxborough, but to lose like they did is a huge concern. This offensive line performed very well. I think this Pittsburgh Steelers offensive line reacted to the stunts well, played well in pass protection, but Ben Roethlisberger held the ball onto it too long, fed Dante Moncrief a bad Dante Moncrief. They missed Antonio Brown. I'll say that right now. They missed Antonio Brown. Juju Smith-Schuster locked up by the best cornerback in football in Stephon Gilmore, and he had nowhere to go. You can try Vance McDonald, Dante Moncrief. There's just not a lot of talent there. With Pittsburgh, I'd be very worried. They're not going to get blown out like this against other teams. The Patriots will do that to you, but this offense isn't the same. It did not look the same.
Speaking of blowouts, I'm going to end it right here. The Miami Dolphins and the Baltimore Ravens. Dolphins are the worst team in the NFL, correct?
I would say so. They already have, you know, from reports, they already have players asking to be traded out of that team because of how poorly they played. The offense isn't good. Offensive line's one of the worst in football, if not the worst. Defense has some stars, but the pass rush, oh my gosh, the pass rush is one of the worst in football. Coverage unit's going to struggle because of that. There's just not a lot of positives on this team. And you go against a Baltimore Ravens offense that, if they do have two or three explosive plays early like they did with Marquise Brown, they can't lose. The Ravens are such a good football team running the football, and with that being said, you go up, you go down 14-0 to Baltimore, you're going to lose a lot of those games. And I think Miami is in a world of hurt right now, and I don't see any, you know, lights at the end of the tunnel.
Baltimore, the only AFC North team to grab a W in week one. Thanks again for joining us for this week's PFF. Make sure you're following Austin Gale over on Twitter. Where can they find you? What's your handle?
PFF underscore Austin Gale. Or go ahead and follow at PFF. Got a lot of good stuff coming out on our social channels.
We're going into week two, looking back at week one. We'll be here every week on the pod and on Cincinnati.com. It was great chatting with PFF's Austin Gale. We'll have that each week on the BBP and online. A quick preview. You want to catch that on Cincinnati.com. We talked the numbers. Now we've got to talk about those sideline injuries. We're going to talk with Dr. David Chow. Take it away, Tyler.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I play a doctor, but I'm not a doctor, and I don't know these injury timelines. So I brought on David Chow. He's a renowned doctor and knows a whole lot about these injuries that go on in NFL. How are you doing, Dr. David Chow?
I'm doing fine. You should sail at a Holiday Inn Express and maybe you'll get all the knowledge.
That was a good one. That was a good one. So thanks for coming on here today. And on the Bengals side, I want to ask you some of these injuries because, unfortunately, a lot of the key players are nicked up, starting with Joe Mixon, who suffered a left ankle sprain in week one. Zach Taylor described him as day-to-day. In your opinion, you've seen thousands of ankle injuries. Can we expect him to play in week two versus the 49ers?
I think it is possible that he would play. I don't know that he would be 100% by video, and it's just video. I haven't examined Joe Mixon. He got his left foot trapped, and then the linebacker rolled up on him. So it was an inversion low-type sprain, like basketball players commonly do when you step on someone's foot or something like that. So it's not a high ankle sprain. He's got a chance to play. You know, obviously, it will depend on how he feels and coaching decision, his decision, the doctors. It's not impossible that he could play. We'll just have to follow him along this week. I haven't seen the practice report from today yet in terms of where he's at, but I do think it's possible that he could play.
Mm-hmm. So how long do players typically, how long are they sidelined for ankle injuries of that magnitude?
Well, it depends. Obviously, you know, for a running back like Joe Mixon, an offensive lineman might come back a little more quickly. He needs all his Mixon, needs all his agility, et cetera. But it really depends. If he's had previous ankle sprains, and some of the ligaments are stretched, which makes it easier to roll, it actually means for a quicker recovery. If this was all first time and he's never had an ankle sprain, some of the damage is more acute. Therefore, it might be a little bit longer for him. So it's a wide variety of ranges. But also, keep in mind, recovery is not like a light switch. It's not like either you're 100% or you're not. It's like, as you continue to go, it's more like a slow sunrise. Is Joe Mixon going to play if he's 85%? I don't know. You know, is he going going to wait till 90% because of, you know, substitution patterns, team needs, roster, and what Zach Taylor wants to do. I don't know. That's why there's some unknown. But the fact that he could go is certainly a good sign.
Okay. Well, Joe Mixon is arguably the Bengals' best offensive player, and only the reason why it's arguable is because of A.J. Green. A.J. Green injured his left ankle on the very first day of training camp. In fact, he tore ligaments in that left ankle. I have September 30th circled on my calendar. It's a Monday night game in Pittsburgh. Green was injured late July at training camp, as I mentioned. Is that a realistic timeline for A.J. Green to be back September 30th? That gives him about two months.
Yeah, well, first of all, to your first comment about Mixon being the only or the main guy because A.J. Green is out, John Ross might have something to say with that, at least off of week one. Not off his first 2 years, but off of week one, obviously, he might have something to say about that. But in any case, A.J. Green's initial estimate was indeed 8 weeks. And I think Adam Schefter and or Ian Rappaport kind of reported that, looking at missing the first two games and or something like that. At this point, I think it's optimistic. I actually wrote about it a little bit at my website, profootballdoc.com. If you go to the subscriber updates, you can go there and your listeners can log on, create an account for free, and you'll see what I meant. And essentially what I said there is, look, I think he's behind pace. I don't think the surgery had much to do with it. It was just a simple scope, but it was a bad high ankle sprain where ligaments were torn. 8 weeks is a good initial estimate. But look, just this last week, it's a good sign he traveled to the game, but it's a bad sign he was still in a boot. So if you're in a boot on Sunday, and let's say next Sunday you're out of a boot, and the following Sunday you're doing some jogging, and the following Sunday you're doing some running, and then you're practicing, and then you're playing, that's past your September 30th Monday night game slot. So at this point, I think you're looking at October based on, look, it's just video, it's just information from the outside. I haven't examined him, but I would be very pessimistic on him being ready September 30th. I would take the over on that.
Okay, so you're thinking maybe week five or week six?
Yeah, I think that's where you're – look, week five would be good news at this point in time. You know, it could be week six, but week five would be good news.
Wow. Well, I know Bengals fans do not want to hear that.
Look, I hope I'm wrong, but that's why I sort of explained it at my website in here. I'm not saying it's magical, but realistically, you don't go from a boot to playing, right?
Yeah,
and you don't go from a boot to playing within 2 weeks, right? I mean, usually if you get out of a boot, it's a month before you play. Not a boot that you had on for a day for precaution, but I mean, he was in a scooter and then a boot. I mean, realistically, I mean, you walk before you run, jog, and you jog before you run, and you run before you cut, right?
Yeah. Well, if it's week five or week six, we'll see what the Bengals' record is. I think they can ill afford to lose A.J. Green for a long portion of the season. The first half, I can see, but if they without him for week five, week six, that's going to make it dicey for the Bengals. And another question I had, we had the starting left tackle, Cordy Glenn. He's been in concussion protocol since the second preseason game where he was concussed against Washington. How long do players stay in concussion protocol? I know it kind of varies, but is that a little long to you to be in concussion protocol?
Well, the answer is, and I'm not trying to be facetious here or smart aleck, but as long as they need to be, right? And there's no hard timetable and no magic. It's based on symptoms and their exam. And one thing I can tell you about concussions they're kind of like snowflakes. No two are exactly the same in terms of how they present their symptoms. Sometimes you get hit and you have no symptoms for an hour or a day, and then they show up the next day. Sometimes they're immediate, they go away. Sometimes they gradually get better. Sometimes they get worse before they get better. It's all different. And the fact that he's been out multiple weeks already, means that it's not a guarantee. Look, usually most players return in a little over a week. The majority return in 2 weeks. Some get lucky and return in 1 week. We're looking at, I think, 4 weeks already now. So we'll see. I mean, it's hard to predict where it's at. Obviously, safety first. Mm-hmm. But there's no real way to predict what this, quote, snowflake is going to look like in terms of everyone's looks different. Everyone is unique. And, that's why there's an independent guy that ultimately has to clear him. And hopefully that'll be soon.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fans reach out to me and getting kind of antsy and getting impatient. They want Cordy Glenn out there. Can you just describe the long-term effects of concussions and why doctors are so cautious and so careful with rushing players out with head injuries nowadays? I know there's been a lot of research going on concussions and everything. Can you just kind of describe why the NFL and all these medical doctors are now so careful and this situation is so delicate now with these head injuries?
Yeah, well, the jaded guy would say it was for legal reasons, right? Medical legal reasons,
yeah,
because they don't want to get sued. But the reality is, as much research as there is about concussions, there's still way more we don't know about concussions than what we do know about concussions. What we know about head injuries and concussions and even CTE is still in our relative infancy. Think about this. We're almost in an era in terms of head injuries where we were with knee injuries in Joe Namath's time or earlier, when we called an ACL tear a trick knee and we didn't really know what that really meant. And, there was a time we actually just purposefully took out meniscus because we thought it wasn't needed. And then we realized that causes arthritis. Think about this. If a player gets hit, gets, quote, jacked, it is unconscious for 5 minutes and goes to the hospital with a CT scan, we call that a concussion. If a player takes a minimal blow and sees momentary stars and then is 100% fine, we call that a concussion. They cannot be the same injury, can they? So at some point in time, we're going to get enough knowledge where we can say, this is a grade 2B temporal lobe concussion, and here's our time frame, and here's our treatment, and here's a grade 3C occipital lobe concussion, and here's what this might mean. But we're not there yet. I mean, right now we're in a, quote, pre-MRI era in terms of knees, where everything's a knee sprain, whether it's a meniscus tear, whether it's a loose body, whether it's a MCL or ACL tear, everything's kind of a knee sprain. So we're trying, but, science takes time to sort of catch up.
Dr. David Chow joining us right now on the BBP Extra, and I'm going to follow it up with concussions again. That's something we see all over the NFL, and credit to the NFL because I feel like they're taking more caution when it comes to head injuries right now and more extra steps. For a fan wondering what the rush is and why you don't rush a player back, can you walk them through concussion protocol in the NFL?
Well, Cordy Glenn is an example. I don't think anyone is rushing him back, right? I think they are taking his time. Basically, there's a series of tests, and you have to pass every step to go to the next level. And each level, you start to do some exertion, because exertion can bring on symptoms again. And you pretty much have to be able to pend it, neurologic guy. And there's one in each NFL city, and someone who's not affiliated with the team at all, to get the final check sign-off before a guy can return to play. So that's kind of the process.
And where can fans find you if they want to find out more during the season about player injuries in the NFL?
Well, I'm on Twitter at ProFootballDoc, but the most comprehensive information is at ProFootballDoc.com. Like I said, the website is free right now. We do all sorts of things for fantasy players, DFS players, and gamblers, if that's what your penchant is, including something called the Injury Index. So we would look at, for example, week one, how healthy is the Bengals offense pass game versus how healthy is the Seahawks pass defense. So that's sort of the idea of what we try and do at the website. And then also some real-time information. If you look on there today, we tell you that Darius Geis is likely not going to play for quite a while. We told you in-game that Nick Foles unfortunately looked like he broke his collarbone and would be out for 8 weeks. Tyreek Hill is looking at six, potentially 8 weeks, and is a potential IR candidate. And a lot of that comes in-game. So hopefully it makes watching the game more fun, but maybe some more information for fans too.
I know fantasy football lovers love your site.
Got to get those injuries and those picks right before the games.
Right. Well, the
number one tweet that I would get from fans in the past is, thank you so much. You helped me win my fantasy league, but I don't tell my friends about you. You're the secret weapon. And recently I've been getting a lot of tweets. You used to be my secret weapon, but I don't have the edge anymore because too many people know about you now.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time out and joining us. I'm sure we'll talk to you as the season goes on, Doctor.
Thank you.
Thank you for staying with the BBP Extra. We'll have that every Monday and Tuesday over on the BBP. And catch us on Thursday with a special preview on Cincinnati.com and a 30-minute BBP to get you ready for week two. Tyler, what's on Cincinnati.com?
So I have a story on Carl Lawson's first game back. He talked to me right after that Seahawks loss, and we have some stories coming up later in the week. Joe Mixon injury update, and the Bengals made some roster moves today. So we got those stories up on Cincinnati.com.
Plenty to look at. Make sure you're following along on Twitter, ENQ Sports, and over on the Instagram, ENQ Bengals. Thanks for listening to another BBP.